May it please the court, my name is Carrie Powell, and I represent petitioners. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. At issue in this case is an EPA rule that prohibits state environmental agencies from requiring a facility to perform supplemental monitoring when it issues a Clean Air Act operating permit, even if regulatory authorities determine that existing monitoring requirements are insufficient to assure the source's compliance. This violates Clean Air Act 504A and C, which explicitly requires that these permits include monitoring sufficient to assure compliance. It also violates Clean Air Act Section 114A3, which requires that all major stationary sources be required to perform enhanced monitoring. I'd like to discuss each of these arguments. Since it was first passed in 1970, the Clean Air Act has generated thousands of requirements governing pollution from major stationary sources spelled out in state and federal regulations. In 1990, Congress concluded that enforcement of these requirements was lagging because it was very difficult to determine which of the many requirements applied to a particular source and whether the source was actually complying with those requirements. So in 1990, Congress created the Title V program, requiring each major stationary source to obtain an operating permit that spells out all applicable requirements. But in addition, Congress explicitly required these permits to include an array of obligations that would ensure that it was much easier to determine whether sources are complying with those requirements. And key among those is the requirement that permits include monitoring sufficient to assure compliance. EPA's new prohibition on supplemental monitoring means that state environmental agencies are unable to comply with the Clean Air Act's directive that permits include monitoring sufficient to assure compliance.
Under your rule, what would the state permitting authority, what would be the source of the standards that they would impose to assure compliance?
Well, Title V expressly requires that permits include monitoring sufficient to assure compliance. So, however,
does the permitting authority just decide on its own in this case by case?
Well, it's up to the EPA to direct permitting authorities how they should go about complying with the statutory requirement. And it's important to recognize that initially, when the program first began, and then throughout most of the history of the program, EPA directed permitting authorities that they had to review the monitoring that was already specified in regulations, and where it was insufficient, they needed to supplement it. And now what EPA has done is take away that and, in fact, ban permitting authorities from adding that monitoring.
I presume because the first one didn't work well, right?
Regardless of why they chose to do it, the problem is that it is EPA's responsibility under the Act to ensure that each Title V permit includes monitoring sufficient to assure compliance.
Each Title V permit before the permit's issued or?
At the time that it's issued, and currently the program.
Where does it say that in the statute, at the time that it's issued?
Well, the statute specifically says that each permit must include monitoring sufficient to assure compliance.
Doesn't say anything about when, at the time, though, does it?
Well, what it does say is that permits have to be issued, that all facilities became subject to the program in about 1992 and had to file permit applications. And then the statute is very explicit
on how the EPA's point be that that's the goal, we're going to get there, but we have discretion how to get to that goal. Well, and the previous regime didn't work.
Well, it's not just a goal that each permit include monitoring sufficient to assure compliance. It is a statutory requirement. And so the statute plainly does not envision that EPA will take its time and someday get there, that these permits will include sufficient monitoring. And keep in mind,
you're saying no permit should be issued until the monitoring requirement is that assures compliance is part of that permit.
That's correct. And again, EPA has had this program underway for some time, so there are approximately 14,000 permits already in existence. These permits have to be renewed every 5 years. They're also continually being modified, and new permits are being issued. And so the problem here is we've got a program that's already running, and permitting authorities have an obligation that they have to act on these renewal applications within 18 months after they're filed, and permits are coming up for renewal constantly.
In Appalachian Power, we expressed some concern about allowing local authorities to I think the phrase was to rove through the regulations and find which were adequate and which were not adequate, and then impose their own rule. I'm concerned about that as well. Can you address that concern for me?
Well, again, the Title V was created to expressly require that permits include monitoring, and the way that it was set up was Congress was trying to solve a problem, which was that after 20 years of the Act's implementation, we weren't actually assuring that these facilities were in compliance. And so on top of that, a safeguard was put in place that all of these permits come out, one court has said, that it is kind of like a source-specific Bible to Clean Air Act compliance, because it sets out a regime where you not only know what applies, but you have sufficient monitoring. And throughout the Title V section of the Act, it spells out that there are reporting requirements. They have to be submitted every 6 months. There's an annual compliance certification. And so Congress unambiguously made it their intent that these permits would assure compliance. Now, how EPA goes about doing that...
Yeah, it also unambiguously gave the administrator the primary role here.
That's right.
504B seems to be a specific grant of authority to prescribe the procedures and methods for determining compliance and for monitoring, which seems to give the administrator the authority to determine what's necessary and how to go about, as you put it, assuring compliance.
Sure, and they may do that by rule, although that's in contrast to these other statutory provisions that say permits shall include monitoring. They may do it by rule, and by rule can mean a lot of different things. One thing it could mean is that the rule says that permitting authorities have responsibility to add this monitoring on a case-by-case basis.
Right, exactly.
So,
in other words, right.
And coming back to the fundamental problem we're facing is, you're correct, the Act does place the burden on EPA to implement this statute. Mm-hmm. And what EPA has done is they had a prior approach. They took away a significant part of that prior approach, and they replaced it with nothing except for a promise. And that promise was that at some point they would upgrade monitoring and existing requirements so it would no longer be necessary to supplement monitoring and permits.
Well, is the approach that the applicable requirements are sufficient to ensure periodic monitoring?
Well, again, the periodic part is, I mean, that sort of tangles up into EPA's Part 70 regulations.
Right.
And keep in mind
how
here that this is a challenge not just to this recent EPA interpretation, but also to the rules themselves. This is a lawsuit that's been pending for a long time. And so insofar as those rules cannot be interpreted in a way that complies with the statute, we're also asking that the rules be vacated. But as far as the pre-existing monitoring that's in regulations, there's absolutely nothing in the statute that indicates any presumption that the pre-existing monitoring requirements were already good enough to fulfill Title V. It's just not in there. And then as a factual matter, EPA expressly disavows any claim that they have actually reviewed the existing monitoring requirements or determined that they're sufficient. Quite to the contrary, there is substantial evidence in the record that EPA is well aware of deficiencies.
Well, they say that in their brief.
Well, what they say in their brief is, and they highlight, that they have never claimed that monitoring in these pre-existing requirements is sufficient. And they completely disavow that. But also in the record, we point to one draft Federal Register notice, which had EPA staff actually identifying federal rules where they were convinced that monitoring was deficient. And EPA doesn't disavow that in its brief. And we also, in response, after this court vacated and remanded the issue back to the agency a couple years ago, we filed comments with the agency identifying in hundreds of pages of comments filed by an expert detailing various requirements in federal and state rules that have insufficient monitoring. And to date, EPA has not responded to those. It's unclear whether they will ever respond to those. So the record is replete with evidence of this problem, and EPA never disavows it, which just brings us back to why this is such a surprising gap in the program, because monitoring is such a key part of the Title V process, and EPA never explains how a state permitting authority could comply with the statute and issue a permit that includes monitoring sufficient to assure compliance, if they are banned from supplementing that monitoring, even when they conclude that it is insufficient. EPA claims that none of this matters, but it does, because it is EPA's obligation to implement this statute. They cannot take away a key part of the program without replacing it with something. And we have no guarantee that EPA will ever get around to upgrading those rules. EPA promised in 1992 that they would start that process, and they have an awful long way to go still. And they haven't committed to doing it. In the record, we presented evidence that EPA officials had said they don't have the resources to do a thorough review, and EPA never refuted that. I'd like to move on quickly to our other argument, which is about 114A3 of the Act. That is the requirement that directs that EPA shall require all major stationary sources to perform enhanced monitoring. Now, there's a different rule that EPA designed to implement this rule, this statutory requirement in part, and that's the Compliance Assurance Monitoring Rule. The EPA admits that this rule does not cover all major stationary sources, however. And in NRDC v. EPA, an environmental organization, one of the petitioners in this case, challenged that rule on the basis that EPA has to issue a rule that covers all sources. And this court upheld the Compliance Assurance Monitoring Rule expressly by looking at the entire rulemaking package. And the court found that while the Compliance Assurance Monitoring Rule doesn't cover all sources, that if you look at that in conjunction with other rules, including the residual Part 70 rules that require all sources, that if they're not subject to the Compliance Assurance Monitoring Rule, at least, this court held, they'll be subject to Part 70's general requirement that permits include monitoring sufficient to assure compliance. And what EPA has now done is take away a key part of that program that the court was relying on in saying that EPA's rules complied with 114A3. And they cannot do that. And they provided no explanation whatsoever for how, even though they've taken away this part and now it expressly does not require all sources to include monitoring sufficient to assure compliance, or I'm sorry, enhanced monitoring, that they haven't shown how they're filling in the gaps. Again, they fall back on this idea that they're going to be upgrading monitoring in the future.
And wasn't the baseline of NRDC that I think the language was that plainly there has to be enhanced monitoring at every major source?
The plainly statement was the court looking at 114A3,
right,
which says,
yeah,
you know, that language is crystal clear. And then the court went on to say, but if you look at the whole package,
right,
including, and they expressly relied upon Part 70, when you look at it together, all the sources are covered. And now all EPA can do is say, maybe we'll get to it, we'll upgrade monitoring and existing rules. If an agency could get away with that, they could do practically anything, because every time they did something that didn't comply with the statute, they could just promise that they'll fix it in the future. And that can't stand. To conclude, we ask the court to vacate EPA's 2006 regulatory interpretation. We believe that the existing rules can be interpreted in a way that provides that all permits will include monitoring sufficient to assure compliance, with permitting authorities supplementing inadequate monitoring. If the court concludes, though, that the regulations can't be read that way, we are challenging the underlying Part 70 rule, and we ask that those provisions be vacated. If there are no further questions, I'll reserve the remaining time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Morning, Your Honor. My name is Cynthia Morris, Department of Justice. I'm speaking for the Environmental Protection Agency. And with me at council table is Apple Chapman. She's with the EPA Office of General Counsel. May it please the court, EPA's Part 70 regulations do fully comply with the requirements of Title V, because they require that every permit issued under Title V contain periodic monitoring for the emissions of the applicable requirements to every source. Periodic monitoring is what EPA has established as the minimum requirements under Title V.
Does periodic monitoring assure compliance?
Well, assure compliance is not defined in the statute by Congress. It was left to EPA to determine what type of monitoring is in fact necessary.
Assure compliance means assure compliance, does it? Why do you need to define assure compliance with the permit? The permit says you must do this. You have to monitor to make certain you can do this. Why would you need a definition of that?
Assuring compliance is very complicated in measuring Clean Air Act emissions.
As far as the meaning of the requirement, there's not a lot of ambiguity. There's sometimes government agencies find ambiguity in a no smoking sign.
It is particularly complex in the Clean Air Act context. It is almost impossible to guarantee that any type of monitoring is going to absolutely assure compliance with the emission limitation, and EPA has to determine.
But does your periodic monitoring require that it assure compliance?
Well, periodic monitoring is what EPA has determined will be sufficient to give good evidence of compliance. It certainly is not the most stringent monitoring allowed. In fact, Congress specifically recognized in 504B that this provision to require to set minimum monitoring requirements in Title V permits does not require that EPA impose continuous monitoring on the sources. Continuous monitoring may be perceived as the Cadillac of monitoring to maximize the likelihood of achieving compliance, but even then.
Well, if your answer isn't yes to Judge Griffith, I'm not sure how you can prevail.
I'm sorry?
If your answer is not yes to Judge Griffith's question, I'm not sure how you can prevail.
The answer is yes.
I mean.
But it was up to EPA to determine when implementing the Title V program what minimum requirements for monitoring should be imposed on in each one of the permits. And EPA has filled in the gaps with the Section 70.6A3 provision. EPA has said that if the applicable requirement already contains periodic monitoring, and that applicable requirement, of course, Your Honor, was promulgated pursuant to notice and comment rulemaking, and if there were concerns at that time about the sufficiency of that monitoring, that could have been raised during that process. So EPA has said that if the applicable regulation contains periodic monitoring, then the permitting authority should take that applicable regulation and import it into the Title V permit, the monitoring provisions, just as it is required to import the substantive emission limitations.
It comes back to a yes answer to Judge Griffith's question.
It does come back to a yes. The gap that gets filled in.
You have to have a yes there to get where you got there.
The gap that is filled in is that there are indeed some of the applicable regulations, primarily those that were promulgated prior to the 1990 amendments to the Clean Air Act, that may not contain periodic monitoring. They may contain, for example, requirements to test the emissions at one time on startup. And EPA determined that that was not sufficient to meet the minimum requirements of Title V, and in that instance did specifically delegate to the state authorities.
Probably is going to bother all of you environmental lawyers. I'm going to use the U.S. Code citation instead of the Act citation because I have this running problem that all of you cite the Act in the brief and then give us an appendix that is laid out in terms of the statute, so that we have to look back and forth to find out what we're talking about. 42 U.S.C.A. Section 7661C(a), each permit issued under this subchapter, each permit shall include enforceable emission limitations and such other conditions as are necessary to assure compliance with applicable requirements of this chapter. Now, that issuance under that section is being done by the state. Is that correct?
The state is issuing the permit. That's
so
correct.
It would seem that the conditions laid out there would be affecting the acts and standards of the state in the issuance of the permit, right?
But not exactly, Your Honor. The state issues.
Why not?
Well, the state must issue the permit, but it must do so in accordance with and in compliance with its Title V permitting program that's approved.
It must do so in accordance with law, too, Counsel.
Well, that's true.
The statute says that each permit, and that sounds like case by case, doesn't it?
Well, no, I don't think it does, because the same statute that you're referring to also requires in three different places, it delegates to EPA not only the authority, but the obligation to promulgate regulations to implement that program.
I don't want to look at this section, but looking at this section, each permit issued under this subchapter shall include. Doesn't that sound like the statute is saying what each permit shall include?
It is saying what each permit shall include, but my difference with your approach, Your Honor, is that the permit program is what says what it must include. It's not that every state, a local permitting authority makes its own determination.
How do I read the statute and determine that? The statute says each permit issued under this subchapter shall include.
I think you read it by looking at section 502B.
Give me a statutory citation, or tell me where it is in the statutory bill.
Excuse me, grab my book.
I think it's the same one.
I'm accustomed to referring to the Clean Air Act section, but it is the same section.
We have about 100 different agencies that come to us, each of which has an act that they like to refer to by the act citations, and then they give us appendices and put forward in statutory. Now, you, I think in your brief you actually have the references, but I've got the blue brief in front of me. So
I do try to give you both.
I'm passing some more than you at the moment.
The section is 7661 of the Clean Air Act, and part B requires
part what? I'm sorry.
76.
Yeah, part what?
7661B.
B.
It's titled Regulations. And that provides that the administrator shall promulgate within 12 months regulations establishing the minimum elements of a permit program, and that the minimum elements shall include, down under part two of that section, monitoring and reporting requirements. So Congress is saying to EPA, you tell the state and local permitting authorities what the minimum requirements are, and then EPA must approve the implementing program.
And then Congress says in 7661C-A, each permit issued under this subchapter shall include enforceable emission limitations and such other requirements as the conditions as are necessary to ensure compliance with applicable requirements of this chapter.
Absolutely, and I interpret that, Your Honor, as Congress's command to EPA to make certain that the Title V permit program that it devises will accomplish that standard. And EPA did accomplish that standard when it required that all of the permits must contain periodic monitoring.
All the permits now, but isn't it, don't each permit and all permits mean something different? All permits would seem to impose the collective requirements on what the collective result of all the permits taken together is. Each permit, doesn't that seem to imply, at least imply, what petitioners are suggesting, that this has to be a case-by-case determination?
I think not, Your Honor. EPA was looking at each permit and does, in fact, require that each permit contain the periodic monitoring provisions for each one of the applicable regulations.
And you'd say that is inherently sufficient.
For Title V purposes, EPA is entitled, I believe, to the deference in its determination that that is the minimum requirement. Title V asks for minimum requirements sufficient to assure compliance. Now, to address Council's concern about EPA's acknowledgement that indeed some of these monitoring requirements, even some of those that include periodic monitoring, can be improved. And EPA has recognized that there may be some out there that should be improved. But EPA has determined.
In other words, EPA has recognized that there's some out there that don't assure compliance.
Some that may not assure compliance. I don't think that the testing has been done to find out exactly how much is necessary. In fact, as I had said before, I'm not sure that any amount of monitoring will ever guarantee that you can assure compliance at every facility with every one of the applicable regulations.
That may mean that Congress required something that's impossible, but it doesn't mean that Congress didn't require it.
Well, EPA is addressing it to the extent that it possibly can. It has determined that if there are such requirements out there that are not sufficient or that can be approved, that really should be EPA to make that determination of which ones may be warranting improvement and how to improve them. And EPA would make that determination through a notice and comment proceeding so that everybody may be involved in determining or commenting on whether additional monitoring requirements are necessary, and if so, what type of monitoring requirements. And that would also provide consistency so that all of the sources similarly situated, that is, all of the sources subject to that applicable requirement, would be subject to the same monitoring provisions to measure compliance. And EPA determined reasonably that that is a much better approach than the case-by-case permit approach that had been previously used. That had, as Judge Griffith suggested earlier, proven to be very inefficient. It simply did not work.
But that's really not the inquiry for us, is it? The inquiry for us is what did Congress intend by this language where it says each permit shall. Right.
And I do think...
As Judge Santel suggested, he's too much of a statesman to say it. You know, Congress can make bad laws. They've made mistakes, but that's not our job to fix it.
In this case, it may have filled in its own gap, because Title V in the provision we're referring to does require that EPA pass regulations to implement a program to establish the minimum requirements. It says minimum requirements of the permitting program. But then in Section 114, which is a different section of the Act, but passed by Congress at the same time during the 1990 amendments, Congress went on to say that all of the major sources must also provide enhanced monitoring. That's a different section. Mm-hmm. The rules that are before the court today, the Title Part 70 rules, were passed pursuant to the Title V provisions to provide the minimum requirements. This court has considered before in the NRDC case the provisions that EPA has passed pursuant to Section 114. That's a different section, a different piece of rulemaking authority. So our position...
Well, your client agency has people that go over the Hill all the time asking for things. Occasionally they get some of them. Do you know if there's been any effort to get this changed from this each case language after the first methodology didn't work?
Not to my knowledge.
I'm not much of a legislative history person, but just for curiosity.
Not to my knowledge that EPA has ever gone to request such further authority, and it may be because EPA has interpreted that statute as providing it the necessary discretion to determine what the minimum requirements are.
And they wouldn't want to suggest that they didn't already have that.
Well, I believe they do.
Your position is, of course, that EPA has the discretion to allow case by case.
Absolutely. In fact, it's our position that the statute, by giving EPA the command to implement the Title V program, does give it the authority to go either way. EPA could give authority to the states to fill it in or not. What EPA has done here is really a hybrid approach. EPA has said, when we have promulgated a statute or a regulation that contains periodic monitoring, that's good enough and you're using it. If we haven't done that, if you don't have periodic monitoring, EPA is telling the states, then you fill in that gap. Then you use your own discretion. And there are some areas then where the state permitting authorities will have to determine their own permit requirements for monitoring. And it is true that in those cases, we may end up with some inconsistency and certainly some inefficiency as the various 100 or so permitting authorities go about looking at each one of these provisions. But EPA has limited that area to where the gaps are.
Sure why that is inherently a bad thing. EPA argues against the inconsistency of various permitting authorities, but isn't that inherent in A, the federal system per se, and B, the permitting system that authorizes all of those different permitting authorities?
Well, in most instances,
if
Your Honor,
there's not going to be some sort of variation, why have them up there?
In most instances, the agency does have the option to go with a case-by-case basis or to go through rulemaking, and it makes an informed judgment about which is better in the circumstances.
Yeah.
And here, EPA has determined that, to the extent possible, it is better to go in the rulemaking approach for a couple of reasons. I think the most significant, or what I think is consistent with this court's earlier rulings, is that those have been proceedings adopted through a notice and comment rulemaking proceeding. And the court in Appalachian Power suggested that when a provision is adopted through notice and comment rulemaking proceeding, it should be revised, if at all, through that same process. That it should not be each individual state permitting authority may decide what they think is appropriate and impose different and more stringent requirements because they disagree with the federally promulgated regulation. That would be up to EPA to go back and improve. And as we've mentioned in our brief, EPA is in fact working on that. They've set out a programmatic approach. It's not going to be implemented in the next 24 hours. It goes through a process. But EPA is looking at several different rules where they may, in fact, be promulgating additional rules that might increase and make more stringent the monitoring provisions where they find that it's appropriate after receiving notice and comment. If I could say in conclusion, Your Honor, unless there were any other comments,
conclude
I want to...
quickly. Your time is up.
I did want to conclude that the Part 70 program, as it is interpreted by EPA, does comply entirely with the Title V program. And to the extent Section 114 requires enhanced monitoring, that will be coming forth through the programmatic approach that EPA has announced. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear from the intervener.
Good morning. Lauren Freeman, Hunton and Williams, representing the interveners this morning. May it please the court. I have a limited amount of time and a lot of things I'd like to cover, so I'll jump right in. I just want to make clear where interveners stand on this. We do agree with EPA that their rule is appropriate, and we also agree with them that they have met the minimum statutory requirements for monitoring with the combination of the compliance assurance monitoring rule under the enhanced monitoring section of 114 and the periodic monitoring rule in Part 70 of the Title V provisions. Where we disagree with EPA is about whether the statute even provides authority to go beyond that in individual permit proceedings by delegating to states the authority to revise or supplement existing monitoring. I wanted to address three points. The substantive nature of monitoring, because it is substantive, it costs money, it imposes burdens, it requires resources, and it doesn't just determine whether or not a source is in compliance, it actually defines the compliance obligation itself. Because when EPA sets standards and states set standards, they don't just pluck an emission limit, a numerical limit, out of the air. They do it based on data from monitoring and measurement techniques, and those have precision and accuracy and sampling times and conditions under which they could be run, and all of those things are built into the standard itself and whether it's achievable. That's why it's so important that the monitoring that's used to determine compliance is established in the same type of proceeding as the emission limit itself, and that it only be revised through that proceeding. So you can consider costs, applicability of the Paperwork Reduction Act, so that you can consider the substantive requirements of the Act for achievability of emission limits under 111 and 112, and all the other substantive and procedural requirements, including the limitations on judicial review. So that's sort of a summary of the substantive nature of monitoring and why rulemaking is so important. Now, what the petitioners are asking this court to find is that section, that the code section 7661C, A and C, have basically thrown all that out the window and said, based on three words, the words to assure compliance, conditions to assure compliance.
No, I'm not at all sure they're saying they thrown it out the window. Are they not saying that in addition to all of that, there also has to be this finding by the issuing authority?
Well, yes, but I think that EPA's...
So you're setting up a straw argument when you say they're throwing all that out the window.
Well, EPA's counsel, I think, said it well, is that if these requirements are established through rulemaking, you can really only revise them through rulemaking. And if, even though they call it...
I don't know that they're asking for a revision. They're simply saying that another section of the statute requires additional attention to the goal in each permit, aren't they?
Well, if the monitoring they're asking for is monitoring that's used to assure compliance, and this is something that sources are obligated to look at when they certify compliance, the responsible official under penalty of perjury makes it a legal determination whether or not they're in compliance. That's the purpose of that monitoring, which they say it is. How can it be anything other than a revision to the compliance method that's already been established?
It can be in addition to it. There are all sorts of instances in which people have to comply with more than one regulatory scheme, industries have to, or more than one part of a regulatory scheme. It doesn't revise Part A that you have to comply with Part B also. I don't follow the logic of that.
Well, maybe it would help if we looked at the statutory language, because we do have a different view of it than either petitioners or the EPA counsel. And you started to walk through it, and I'd like to try to do that again.
Okay.
In Section 7661C, A and C.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you step back and look at this and forget all of the additional baggage that comes with this to assure compliance standard, there is a very reasonable and simple way to interpret this. What Congress was saying was, when you go out and you look at all of the requirements that apply to a source, which may be in a SIP, a FIP, a federal rule, an NSPS, a MACT, a pre-construction permit, when you go out and look at all of those things, you can't put all of them in the permit, because then you'd have a permit that was thousands of pages long. You have to cull out of those the essential terms that assure compliance with the Act. And it says that you have to include emission limits. Now, they're not giving states authority to case by case create emission limits in Title V. They're saying you go into those additional regulations and permits and you cull out the emission limits and you make sure there is a condition in the permit that sets out those emission limits. The next thing, schedule of compliance. They are not in this provision saying go out and create a schedule of compliance. They're referring to the schedule of compliance that is in, let's see, Section 7661B. That is the compliance plan that the permittee puts together when they submit their application that says how they're going to comply. It's something that comes from another section of the statute. The next thing is submitting results of required monitoring. Again, that's something that comes from somewhere else. And this final thing, there is the other conditions.
You would say that the modifying clause, such other conditions as are necessary, reaches the, as are necessary to ensure compliance, the modifying part, necessary to ensure compliance, modifies such other conditions rather than modifying all of the preceding list, right?
Well, you could certainly read it that way, but I don't think that that necessarily means that it is creating authority.
Right.
EPA.
That's not a hostile question.
Okay.
I was summarizing what you were saying.
Yeah, I think that that's, I'm not sure that that's completely unambiguous whether that's modifying all those provisions or just the conditions.
It certainly would be reasonable to so conclude.
I think that would be reasonable. But the way we see that section, and EPA actually said this in the proposal to Part 70 in the preamble, they interpreted this provision as not providing carte blanche authority for permitting authorities to go out and create new conditions, but as an acknowledgement that rather than putting wholesale into permits all of the existing requirements throughout there, that they could create conditions that would have the same effect of assuring compliance as those thousands of pages of regulations. And it was just an acknowledgement that you could create, not only that you could, but they had to create conditions that ensured that the Act, the requirements.
See, between you and me, we've used up all of your time. You can conclude, please, Council.
Okay, thank you. I would like to make one other point about 114 and EPA's obligation under 114. In the NRDC case, the way we read that, EPA came in and said we have CAM, the Compliance Assurance Monitoring Rule, and we have periodic monitoring that applies to those sources that are smaller, that have less variable emissions, for which a periodic stack test is sufficient.
That's not a very quick conclusion when you're trying to.
Sorry. Is my time up?
Thank you, Council.
Thank you.
How much time do Council have left? We'll hear you in rebuttal, Council.
EPA's lead argument is that monitoring is sufficient to ensure compliance so long as it's periodic. And I have to say I'm completely shocked that they led with that argument, since they didn't say it in their Federal Register notice, in their proposal, or their final, and they didn't argue it in their brief. We submitted, in response to their Federal Register notice, extensive comments saying that monitoring that is merely periodic is not necessarily sufficient to assure compliance. And we laid out in our opening brief a whole series of examples where EPA had itself also found that monitoring that's merely periodic is not sufficient to assure compliance. But I want to point you to EPA's brief in this case. They said, petitioners contend that EPA has not made and that the record does not support a finding that all existing periodic monitoring and all underlying applicable requirements is sufficient to assure compliance, and that EPA's decision is therefore unlawful and arbitrary. The soundness of EPA's approach, however, does not require a finding that all underlying monitoring requirements are adequate. And as petitioners are well aware, EPA has never claimed that to be the case.
Well, I think I had a colloquy with the EPA counsel about exactly that.
That's right. And so the fact that they've started off by saying, well, in fact, all monitoring is sufficient to assure compliance merely if it's periodic is strange, given that it wasn't even, it was expressly disavowed. They never responded to the abundant comments in the record that argued that, in fact, they were wrong about that. And so if that's really the fundamental basis for their opinion, then at a bare minimum, what they've done is arbitrary, because they just completely ignored relevant comments that were central to their decision. I also wanted to...
Statutory language seems to raise a key question of who decides what's sufficient to assure compliance.
Well, at the outset, I can say that...
And why isn't that EPA?
Well, even if it is EPA, EPA has expressly disavowed any claim that pre-existing monitoring requirements are sufficient to assure compliance. So, fundamentally, what we have before us is a statute that says monitoring needs to assure compliance, and an agency that says, look, we're not relying on any finding that pre-existing monitoring does that. And so even if there's some question about the amount of discretion EPA has to make that decision, that's not what we're faced with here. EPA hasn't made that finding. I also wanted to note that EPA's argument about basically saying that anything that's periodic is good enough also doesn't really get to the enhanced monitoring provision in 114A3, because certainly when Congress said that all major stationary sources have to perform enhanced monitoring in 1990, it doesn't really make sense.
What do you think enhanced meant?
Excuse me?
What did enhanced mean as of 1990?
Well, it had to mean something more than what they were already doing,
It meant more than monitoring just at day one. Right.
Sure, but nothing said, by the way, nothing in the statute says that the only thing that Congress was doing was trying to address only situations where there was only one test. It generally requires monitoring to assure compliance.
True, but we don't know what enhanced means. We don't know what enhanced requires a baseline. It's unclear what the baseline is.
I'm just making the point that any interpretation of the word enhanced would mean something more than what was already there. And what EPA is saying here is that even if something was promulgated in 1980, 10 years before Title V ever came to be, that as long as it required something periodic, that would qualify. And that just that can't be an interpretation of enhanced.
That's true for the pre-1990 requirements. Right. Is that true for the
My point is only that they still left open this gap that you know I.
State the gap for me. I lost it.
Excuse me. The gap is that I was just pointing out that in this lead argument that anything that's periodic is sufficient doesn't address 114A3.
So we're back to that gap.
Yes, okay. Back to the.
Not some new gap. Enhanced mean better than 1990, or better than what's going on somewhere else right now.
You know, this case does not go fundamentally to the meaning of enhanced. The point is just that, you know, as a basic, the fundamental point here is this argument turns on the reasons why this court upheld the compliance assurance monitoring rule as a package, and a sort of threshold issue there was that the Part 70 rules, in addition to the compliance assurance monitoring rules, did that. I see I have just a few seconds left. I want to quickly address what was primarily our intervener's arguments. They were doing a lot to rely on this idea that adding monitoring somehow is a new substantive requirement that shouldn't be done on a case-by-case basis. And I wanted to raise a couple different responses to that. I will. The first is that an air pollution limit is plainly meant to protect people all the time. And so fundamentally, just requiring a source to monitor more frequently to help us know whether the source is complying with that is not a new substantive change to the limit. It's doing exactly what Congress wanted here, which was to help us monitor compliance. Also, keep in mind that EPA has soundly rejected any argument that adding monitoring changes a rule, and that was in the credible evidence rule.
Okay.
And then finally, it's just EPA and industry don't really believe this argument because the compliance assurance monitoring rule.
Make a finding as to what they believe.
All right. Well, again, thank you. And
we have hard enough time knowing what we believe.